David Harris, a very, very good morning to you. Are you sensitive?
Not at all, but I'm going to try one on you.
Mm.
I've only seen you in photographs, and you've definitely got a baby's haircut.
Yep, it's, you know, it's that whole Shakespearean thing, you know, the seven stages of life and when we go back to sans everything. David Harris, a very, very good morning to you. All right, let's talking about the stages of life. Lots of news coverage at the moment about this one particular woman, a British citizen, who went off to become an ISIS bride. She has a child there, and then she kind of probably has enough of the heat and all and longs for the misty hills of England and wants to come home. She seems to be being denied entrance. Or give us some background here.
Shamima Begum was one of numerous teenage girls who fell in love with the idea of ISIS, the idea of going to do their bit for the cause, whether it meant fighting or more often than not marrying somebody in a very non-official ceremony in order to become mothers of future jihadis. She now wants to come back to the UK to have her child in the UK, and you know, a decision has to be made. But she's not the only person in this situation. You're looking at hundreds, if not thousands, of women and their children, children who either went off to Syria and Iraq. Now we're talking more about Syria, you know, when they were very small kids, or were born over there over the last 4 or 5 years. What do we do with them? Donald Trump made it very clear over the weekend that he thinks it is incumbent on all nations, and he was particularly pointing the finger at the European Union bloc, to take these people back. If we don't take them back, what happens to them? And then you've got the moral question. Okay, so Shamima Begum herself made that decision probably as an immature, starstruck teenager, but at least she was to some extent responsible for her own decisions. But what about her children? They've been born to this, or they were dragged there as small children. What are they meant to do?
Mm. Yeah, I see. There's a Sky News is playing an interview of her. She's looking very, very sad, I have to say. It certainly, I can tell you from a body language perspective, although you can't see much of her body. This is scripted. This is completely, completely scripted, including her body language, her facial expressions. This is not a natural interview. I can tell you that right now. Just looking at it without any sound. She says, a quote from her is, "I think that people should have sympathy towards me for everything that I have been through." And as you say, it's a very, very difficult question, not even for her, but from her children's perspective. The other problem is how trustful should the British authorities be around this? You know, we've certainly seen when many of the refugees came through to Europe, of course, many of them and probably most of them were legitimate people looking for refuge in a safe haven, but there were those that purported to be doing so and in fact were jihadists.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously these are people, when we're talking about Shamima and others, we're talking about people who've clearly been radicalized either mm-hmm. through their own choice or because somebody enticed them in that direction. Let me tell you the story of a woman called Tanya Joya, who I would like to think of as being a friend these days. A British woman, 4 kids, dragged off by her husband to Egypt, willingly, to Egypt, then taken to Syria less willingly. He's an American by the name of John Georgulis. He became one of the, key people in ISIS. He was the head of propaganda for them. We're not sure if he's alive or dead. She fled with her children. The United States did give her sanctuary, basically because of her 4 children, who are now jointly in her care and in the care of the children's grandparents, the parents of the terrorist. And now Tanya Joya is dedicating her life to de-radicalization work. She was recently interviewed by David Horovitz from the Times of Israel. Mm-hmm. Fascinating interview. At the end of it, I spoke to David. I've known him for many years. I said, what do you think? And he said, I'll be honest with you, after a 2-3 hour interview, it was impossible to make my mind up one way or the other. So the way I wrote the article was to let the public make their mind up.
It is fascinating. And I'd love to hear your thoughts. 345-199 or 061-895-1019. What are your thoughts on allowing this type of person back into a place like the United Kingdom or the United States? Making, you know, she did make the choice herself. Her children did not. What do you think about that? She did say that she has no issue with beheading, and she actually had a very good time. She doesn't regret what she did because it's made her stronger, but now she would like to just simply come home. I mean, you certainly don't get a sense of real regret there, do you, David?
No. In her case, it's anger, it's frustration, and it's just, you know, the raising of our collective hands saying, well, what the heck are we meant to do with somebody like this? Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there'll be people listening to this who would say, even if she didn't kill somebody herself, the fact that she bought into this ideology, the fact that she married somebody who was doing this stuff or let them father her children, and that she wanted to bring her children into the jihadi world, she deserves to have her life terminated. And there's a lot of justification in that argument. On the other hand, we are a modern civil society. She has not committed those crimes as far as we know. Is it fair to leave her in a country like Syria or Iraq where she will likely be tortured, where there will be breaches of the Geneva Convention in the way that people deal with her? It's a very tricky situation. I tend to lean to the more authoritarian, stricter side of things in this particular argument, but clearly because there are children involved, we have to view it in a very humanitarian way, if you will.
I have to say that I tend to agree with you. That's where my leaning is. If you saw genuine sympathy, and as you say, it was a, you know, the justification on the other side saying that this is a young girl, a young woman who was radicalized, who was at school. I do understand that. But on the other hand, she certainly made the choices. Jenny says her children will become homegrown jihadists. Send her back. And sign saying, isn't this just a ploy to get the UK, her kids, a UK citizenship? Certainly, there's not much to go on to be that confident that this is a genuine situation.
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of second of those comments, the children are entitled to British citizenship anyway,
right,
because they were born to a British mother.
Right, absolutely. How do you think this is going to play out? I mean, now it's just a speculation.
This is going to be case by case basis, country by country. You'll probably see those who left countries with a tougher approach being dealt with more harshly. So maybe I think most would eventually be allowed back into their home countries, but in the tougher countries, for example, anybody who went from Eastern Europe, they're going to probably be incarcerated, whether it's on genuine or trumped up charges, children taken into care and so on. Whereas in the softer liberal Western side of Europe, you can see these people being reintegrated through what tragically are failed de-radicalization programs. The only country that has got any success in this work, and remember, we're at the very early stages of de-radicalization work because it's such a new industry, forgive the word industry, the only country is Germany. Outside of that, things are failing, which, to plug again, is why we at Clarion launched our Preventing Violent Extremism program, because we don't want people to get to that stage of extremism in the first place.
Right. And just tell us about that, just before we say goodbye for today.
Yeah, it's a program that we've launched. It's training. We come to you predominantly around the United States. Happy to consider other destinations. And we work with parents, with teachers, psychologists, law enforcement, and state or local politicians, explaining to them how they can detect signs of radicalization in young people, and we give them the ways to stop that. And we also, because we're a small organization, we introduce them to partners who can deal with this type of thing, people who are used to it, who can say, give the teachers and the parents in particular the tools to deal with the children, to listen to their problems, not to push them away, to make sure that their child or your child does not become an extremist.
All right, and this is aimed across the board at non-religious schools, at Christian schools, Muslim schools, Jewish schools, whichever environment young people are involved with. Is that right?
Absolutely. Anybody could become an extremist, especially in this day and age with modern technology.
All right. So if anybody is listening that is involved at a school that fits any of those descriptions, please go ahead and look at their website. It is well worth considering. David Harris, thank you as always for your fascinating, fascinating input. Time is 8:22.